is an accurate thing. But what is, it's very, very difficult to measure because of the n-square problem and the number of turns. I guess my question for you is, how many turns, even when you went you filled the core with turns, how many turns did you have when you made the measurement that started to settle in where you didn't see much Valeri effect anymore?
Okay. I was using 20-gauge wire, and it's published that maximum number of turns, but it's 21 turns. I used 19, and that brought me within like 1% of the published inductance index. Prior to that, I had used 10 turns, and that yielded a 50% error. And to answer Dick's question, a little late here, but the inductance index that I had calculated in that 10 turns was higher. It was 8, whereas the published value is 49, and that's what I came up with, within 1% or 2%, using 19 turns, and as I said, the maximum number of turns for that core is 21 turns.
Yeah, see, if that's, you're really at the limits, with only 20 turns, you're really limited to the amount of, the percentage of inductance that you're measuring. Here again, but this is an interesting, if you wanted to ever try this one, you could actually go to a very, very thin wire gauge, because the core isn't that big, and like you said, you're filling it up with 20 turns with 20-gauge wire. But in other words, if you were to really step the wire gauge down and go for something like a 40-gauge wire or 35, you could actually get those same 20 turns and just bunch it up on one side of the core. And interestingly enough, with just even not covering the whole area around the core, you'd be amazed that the number would be very similar. Because you could probably take with like 40-gauge wire, put maybe 40 turns on, and only cover maybe a third of the core. And you'd be amazed that you'd still get good accuracy.
Okay, I'll definitely try that. I have reams of, I think it's 32-gauge wire that I bought some years back. I am absolutely amazed at how the price of wire has gone absolutely wild, by the way. This is a spool I think it's about 5 pounds of spool of 32-gauge wire that I bought about 10 years ago for $18 from Mauser, and today they want $180 for it. But I have plenty of it left, so this will be a very good experiment. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
Yeah, Wesley recognized. Yeah, Charlie, I know what you mean. It's sometimes you can actually hunt around on, even on eBay, and find spools of wire. And a lot of times when I'm winding inductors and transformers, I don't like to use the rubber insulated. I like to get that magnet coat around the outside because it's really just like a varnish coat on the wire. So you really can stack a lot of turns in a small space. But I'm pretty sure that the problem that you were experiencing really is an n-square kind of a problem, where if you had 100 turns, you'd really get an accurate measurement, for that inductance index. But on that note, I kind of have to run here tonight, but let me hand it over to Wesley, KC2, QIQ, 73.
73. Charlie, I have a question for you. I understand Glenn does not have to have the lab because he has one in his job. This is his profession. Now, John, I got crazy long before me, and I got crazy probably quite a few months ago. And my question to you is, what makes you spend the money and accomplish your own lab? What was actually driving you to that internship?
Wesley, I think it's just the pure science of all of it, not knowing. I have this fear of not knowing something, so I'm always investigating, usually in the science area. That's basically where I stay. I don't go out of my field of expertise. But the money I've spent, yeah, it's a lot of money, and you've spent a lot too. And like we've said many times, we could buy a couple of houses with this money. But I find it very interesting. And I think it helps keep me young, too, because I'm an old fat man.
actually, I would have to give you my resume. I started as a ham when I was 11 years old, and it's my profession as well as my hobby. In the workplace, there was never any time to pursue my interest, so I had to purchase my own test equipment. It started with my dad. He started teaching me electronics when I was 9 years old. He bought a Heathkit oscilloscope and audio signal generator and some experiments, and really sparked my interest. And over the years, I've spent some obscene amounts of money on tools, test equipment, parts, and publications, and not to mention computers. So I do have a reasonable lab of my own. It's mainly an RF lab. Back to you.
Interesting. Yeah, as you've heard, John is a friend of mine, and he's actually the person the closest to me in experimentation and in conversation. But the real use, Charlie, for this, it has to be something that is like a primary goal, like for me, free energy. Like for John, or that John actually assists me with my searches, and so we both actually have a lot of fun and adrenaline by going to the pod that is already in front of us. There is we know what we want, but what I don't understand is, what is that you're searching for? Is there anything like a particular direction for your objective?
This is WA2ETT. Wesley, we can get philosophical about this. For me, it's the pursuit of knowledge, and it's also to improve my professional skills. I am a degreed electrical engineer, and any opportunity I have to improve those skills and that knowledge, I spend my own time doing it. And I do have a philosophy that sometimes the journey is more important than the destination. So for me, it's the journey, Wesley, and it's the knowledge. Over.
Okay, I'm going to answer that and turn it to John. Well, for me, it's different. When you are hungry, you're searching for food. And when you need to write something, you're searching for a pen and a paper. And by searching for something, I'm getting a lot of additional information. Where is the nearest McDonald's? Or what actually can I use to make my own meal and stuff? So, I went from electronic to measurement equipment to ferrite and the mechanical properties of materials, and then I'm going to the mechanical shop, which is everything that is needed for the professional mechanical shop, which is the CNC machines, lathes, the milling machines and stuff. So actually the knowledge comes to me because of the goal. Now, with you is the knowledge first, and the goal is unknown, which actually puts you, if I understand it properly, in many chaotic directions, which is good, because it increases your knowledge. John, pick up.
Oh, you're right, Wesley. I agree, and Charlie probably has the same experience we do. It's called the serendipitous effect. In our travels and looking for more knowledge to gain more information and just keep assimilating this information is wonderful. And you learn so many things. And out of your field of expertise, now, I was also an electrical engineer. I'm retired now. but I found it interesting all of my life, the many years that I spent in it, and it was very rewarding for me, and I'm in a position now where I can have my lab, which I've had for quite a few years, and I do a lot of interesting experiments here. Some of them go someplace, but you learn more from your failures than you do from your successes. Do you agree, John?
This is WA2ECT. Yes, I do agree. And maybe I can phrase it to both of you that, well, Wesley, your goal is, quote, free energy, or as you describe it, over unity. My goal is knowledge. Knowledge really is the destination, and it does take me in many, many directions. Some give it a medical term, attention deficit disorder. Sometimes I think I suffer from that. I can tell you, I can tell you some stories. I was just doing some calculations the other day, and it's amazing how you, in mathematics and engineering and science, you come across the factor of the square root of 2. So I say to myself, well, 1.414, blah, blah, blah. I say, gee, I don't know. I can't really describe it further out, in decimal form. Well, that's an irrational number. Well, now, exactly, specifically, and I'm a stickler for words, so, exactly what is the definition of an irrational number? Well, an irrational number is a number that cannot be defined by the ratio of two integers. This just takes me down a wild path to, I started doing some reading and looking at numbers with repeating decimals, like 1.6318, 318, 318, and I came across the word repetent, and I never heard of the word repetent before, and it turns out that repetent is the number of digits that are repeated in a repeating decimal, so what I described a repetent to be 3. So, repeater, time out. Repeater,
time out,
cancel.
Yeah, thanks, yeah. You time up the repeater a little, but I've heard most of what you said. There is a person, Markov Rodin. And Markov Rodin is actually known from not only his very much similar mathematics, but in repetitive fashion. But also the Markov Rodin geometry based on the figures. And actually these figures came from the ancient Mayas and Christian symbols. And he was actually, that's how it sounds. Now, coming back to the subject, I wasn't able and I am not able to get knowledge from all of the areas. And if I decide to concentrate on general knowledge, then I would not be able to go beyond the average in any one of them. I was doing that for most of my life when I was in Europe, which is the broad knowledge about everything. And just by concentrating on free energy, I found out that there are three directions. One is here the new magnet motors, the other one is the Tesla coil, and the third one is the HHO, which is the energy from water, by splitting water to two atoms of oxygen and the one atom of hydrogen. So then let me just then that only is mechanics, because the new magnet motors is mostly mechanics and magnetic fields and coils. Then the Tesla is everything that actually we discussed on the TechNet for quite a few months. And then the water split using two electrodes in it and using it as a fuel past that, but it's quite different. In order for me to just understand one thing, I had to go all over the knowledge of free energy area. That was enough for me to find out what do I need, what equipment do I need. And I understand what you're saying, but how did you know that you wanted this particular equipment to collect, not the other? John, pick up.
Well, I found out that my equipment purchases were dependent on the bent direction I had, and I've had oscilloscopes most of my life, but I found I needed different generators, different power levels, different analyzing equipment. That's why now with network analyzers, my spectrum analyzers, I can do a lot more things. But it's very nice to have Charlie in here and someone else to talk to. I know he's a CW guy, basically. He doesn't speak too much, do too much phone work. But it's a pleasure to have you in here, Charlie, and you jump in on our conversations anytime, sir. Over to you, John.
Thank you very much, John. Thank you for that invitation. For me, radio frequency electronics is something that I'm always oriented towards. I'm knowledgeable in digital electronics, analog electronics, but RF always had a certain appeal to me. Starting as a shortwave listener, as a 9-year-old, and you know, a few years after that, wanting to align my receiver to make it receive better. So maybe, you know, that was a goal that pushed me in a certain direction. And building equipment, homebrewing, certainly led to a requirement for test equipment. If you had the right test equipment, it made life much, much easier. So over time, over many years, I think I have a reasonably good lab. I can tell you some stories. I've been very lucky, just about 15 years ago, buying what's called new old stock, that test equipment that was never used, put in storage, and then sold at a deeply discounted price. I'm talking, you know, Hewlett Packard Laboratory. So that, I'm going to get a cramp in my head here. I'm going to wind up crushing this little microphone. I squeezed this button so hard, and a lot of it is nerves. I do have a problem with sometimes connecting a thought to the word, especially on the air. Paper and pencil are great. I may say so. I also have hearing disability that I have to deal with also when I'm speaking. And that's one of the reasons why I push myself to get on this net once in a while, to get used to speaking, to get used to expressing complicated thoughts and ideas verbally. I guess with practice, it will work out. Wesley, I became interested in Nikola Tesla in 1991. I read a biography titled "The Nikola Tesla, Man Out of Time," written by Margaret Cheney, and it was I could not put that book down. He was a fascinating man, and he was a man out of his time. I think he was also a little bit insane. They say there's a fine line between genius and insanity, so maybe that fits. I don't know if you know about his obsession with pigeons, and if you'd like me to describe that to you, I will. Back to you, Wesley.
He called one his wife.
No, I believe I know most, if not everything, about Nikola Tesla. And I was investigating any aspect, even psychological, philosophical, anything in regards to that. But when we talk about ability to express, I mean, I'm not nervous. No, I'm an extremely quiet person. I do raise my voice sometimes, but it's more intentional or automatically or mechanical, then it's emotional. And the reason for that is because the proper expression of using the level of voice actually brings attention about it. So it's mostly trained habit. Yes, I'm very much quiet and stable person. No nerves, involved. And the reason for that is because I have a beautiful life with my wife, and, you know, I couldn't dream about better. But, let me drop. Actually, my wife had a birthday today. She's 31 years old already, so and she was kind of sad about it. I said, well, I'm 54, so don't worry about it. Anyhow, I had to think in Polish and translate it into English. But because the part of the knowledge that I've got was from Russia, then I had to translate it from Russian into Polish, from Polish into English. And then some of them are in other languages. So then I said to myself, why do I need this problem? How about if I just start to think in different language? But it is complicated. So we both have a problem to express. The one thing I found, that the more I talk, the easier it goes. John, pick up.
KC2WG, Beef Friday. Oh, yes, the practice makes perfect. But, you know, we all have our little problems. But the basic problem is our minds are active, and we're always thinking a couple of paragraphs, if not sentences, ahead. And sometimes we can get very confused or sound confused when we're not. But, Charlie, you have no problem in communication, and you should be on more often, and you'll wear in, too. I have communication skill problems myself, so don't worry about it. Over to you, Charlie.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you, John. Appreciate that. You know, I was actually contemplating, like, having two glasses of wine before I get on. Maybe it would calm me down. And yes, your thoughts do. My words trip over my thoughts, if that makes any sense. And Wesley, what you said, yes, I admire that. It's funny you mentioned that. One time I worked with an engineer who came over here from Italy, and he had a heavy Italian accent, and spoke English well. And I asked him, when you're thinking about a problem, in what language do you think about it? And he said, oh, Italian. I said, and then I have to translate when I get this. A solution. Well, at least I don't have to deal with that. Specifically, my problem is I have tinnitus, which is ringing in my ear. So I have very loud ringing constantly. That is a constant competition for my thoughts and my speaking. And this is something that I acquired, unfortunately, over time, from various noise sources. Tesla, the pigeon. Yes, John. Yes, one of the pigeons. He calls his wife. Let me drop for a second.
Charlie, wasn't he a bit of a hypochondriac besides?
John, I was just going to say that. Yes, I believe he wore gloves all the time. Very, very much so. Very paranoid about germs. And contact. Well, my favorite was, I believe he was working on, what was it, Wardenclyffe, it was called. He was working on transmitting high power levels over transmitting power over long distances without wires. And J.P. Morgan was his financier, and everything was going along fine until one day he said, when I get done, power will be available for everyone for free. And that word free, when J.P. Morgan heard that word, he cut off all the funding. Back to you, Doug.
Yes, Charlie, I believe also at the same time, I believe Marconi had sent the messages across on his wireless using basically Tesla's systems, and that's what really was the impetus for J.P. Morgan to drop out, if I remember correctly. I think we read the same book.
I'm not sure. I thought the main impetus was because the word free. And the Marconi issue, that was a separate issue. That was just a fascinating aspect of history. That that Marconi is, I think to this day, is still credited with inventing radio, whereas the Supreme Court, what was it, 1945, Supreme Court of the United States ruled that Tesla was the inventor of radio. And, well, basically, by Paisan, Marconi was a thief. Back to you, Wesley.
Marconi actually was a former employee of Tesla, and he actually stole the concept. But he was able to provide experiments and get the result. I've noticed many times in my life, whenever I had employees, at the beginning, they were very shy and very quiet and very, very productive. With the time, they find out what and why, and then they work less, they were less productive, and they were more requiring. And probably the same mechanism was happening over there. Now, for the employee, there is always the most to get, the less to do. For the employer is the less to spend, the most to get from the employee job. That's always the paradox. So the relationship is being established, let me drop. The relationship is being established by compromise of the employee doesn't have in any given time the comfortability to request more, and he actually agrees to the wages and the character of the work. And the employer is seeing his progress, and he says, okay, I'm satisfied with what I'm paying for it. And there was a conversation between Marconi and Tesla in which Marconi started to demand more, and that's why he left. But actually he was a crook. That is my position at that point, John Picard.
Well, I can't blame the guy for being a strange guy, Tesla, because he experienced a lot of raw deals on his end. I know his breakup with Edison over I don't know, it was like $40,000 or $50,000 that Edison had promised him, and he held him at his word, and Edison would come through and sort of laughed at him. I'm not a booster of Edison, you know. Just we stand on the shoulders of great people, and so did he, and so did Tesla. And the deal he made with Westinghouse when they built the Northeast Power Facility, he was an amazing man. And the fact that he wasn't one to make construction plans. He only had a concept or an idea, and he would relegate that to his employed lower engineers or whatever, and they would develop the system. But he had all of the concepts in his head, and many of them are just being looked at today, such as you know, his death ray and other things. He had so many things that he was thinking of. It's just incredible that all of that came out of one guy. Over to you, Charlie.
In German, it's a Gedanken experiment. An experiment you perform in your head, and you know, geniuses are capable of doing that. The greater geniuses, the greater the success, and less dirty work to everybody else. I think that has its merits, and it has a downside too. something like seeing something work on the bench. You know, you can conceive of an idea, and it's just working beautifully in your head. And then you try to implement it in the real world, the truth. And yes, Wesley, I agree with you completely. Marconi was a thief. Apparently a smart thief, unfortunately. And Edison was no prize. I think Edison was a bit of a dirty dealer. Not a very nice fellow. But that's just my opinion. I it was so many years ago that I read that book. You're making me want to reread the book. I do have some other books. Wesley, I will say to you that, you know, having listened for, I've been listening to the TechNet for, as I said, about 8 years, and only recently did I decide to set up an antenna here and take out the microphone. A few things that are flying through my head right now. One is I'm kind of embarrassed. The first time I came on, I was talking about variometers. I didn't make myself very clear. And it's repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel. Just to repeat, I was a little embarrassed the first time I checked into the net, and I was extraordinarily nervous, and I was just questioning the use of the word variometer. And I did more checking in some very old books. And originally, the variometer... by the way, Wesley, I did watch your video. And what you have there is a variometer type of transformer. But the original variometer, you have essentially two separate windings. They were, in a variometer... They were connected in series. So by orienting the internal coil, you could vary the inductance looking into that series combination of coils. With, as I said, no moving part, I mean, no moving contacts, no sliders, no taps, no cores, no movable cores. And the inductance changed because you're changing the coefficient of coupling, which means you're changing the mutual inductance. You have the self-inductance of the one term plus the self-inductance of the other term. They're in series. Plus you have two times the mutual inductance if the coil is oriented properly. If you orient the coil in a completely opposite way, then it's minus two times the mutual inductance. And that's how you've got this variability. And that's what I was trying to describe. And I think just making an absolute fool out of myself, I don't want to listen to the recording of the net. I was totally incoherent. Hopefully this time I was a little more coherent. And after I made the comment, Dick started to use the term, repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Charlie, we heard you up to the point where you said Dick started to use the term, and then you timed out.
Oh, great, yeah. I have to watch the clock here. After I made my comment, Dick started to use the term variometer type transformer. And I would say that was more appropriate, and I appreciated that he did that. It was kind of a restitution. If you do check the history on it, you'll see that the term variometer was used strictly for the variable inductor that I described. And I also thank both of you for indulging me to try to clarify this while just two guys are listening. But I was quite embarrassed afterwards because I know that I wasn't coherent. I'll shoot it back to you.
Oh, Charlie, don't ever feel embarrassed over things like that, because let me tell you, people who don't make mistakes never did anything. That's a firm belief that I have. I hold everything to that standard. So, that's perfectly acceptable. Well, I look at it also as, it's in a way, it's similar to how humbucking coils are used or buck boost. It's basically the same principle, only it's used in different applications. But Wesley's got a pile of them. I only have one of them in my lab, and I'm trying to figure out how magnets work. I don't even understand that. I'm deep into that, and I feel that I'm getting somewhere very slowly. Over to you, Wes.
Yeah, actually, Dick was using it first, the term pineometer, and then he corrected himself and he used variometer. But the vario was the name used by Zeiss Carl Zeiss for various zoom lenses. It was one of the names for it. And the other was actually the variometer that was designed for the airplanes. Then Vario was the maternal cousin of Colombo family. So we have many meanings of them. And what else can I recall about that? I'm trying to think. Originally, variometer was the first concept of 1893. No, that was 1887, I believe. That is up. That was there was two coils, which one was inside of the other, and was the mechanical device was retracting coil. That was variometer. And then, all of a sudden, one of the guys decided that he's gonna try to turn that coil within the bigger one. But because that coil was too long, so he shortened the coil to fit that. And they found out that it is much easier if the coil has the spherical pattern. And that's what I collected from the beginning of the history of the variometer. Back to you, John.
Yes, I found them very interesting devices. And, you know, when we go back in history, Wesley and I, we not only talk about electronics and the engineering end, but we also, we're into history, art, music, so many different topics, as I find most of the people in this field are, and they enjoy all of those things. So we cover a myriad of objects and conversations, and you'll hear us talking about everything, Charlie. It's amazing. So back to you, Charlie.
This is WA2EG. Well, then, you guys are my kind of people. That's great. My interests are fairly diversified. And I do love history, especially the history of technology. And as a matter of fact, well, it's a clarification, John. It wasn't so much being wrong as it was being incoherent and not expressing myself well at all that time. That's what I was embarrassed over. As far as history, I did quote from a textbook from Terman. I forgot his first name. Terman wrote some of the first comprehensive radio communication textbooks. And one of the books I was trying to quote from was a book written in 1934 describing the variometer as a variable inductor. That's the outcome of it. It looks exactly like what you have. It's just a matter of the two windings being connected in series. What you have there is the form of the transformer. And I went on, I was calling this link coupling too. Just many years past, I heard that term used. And it doesn't necessarily mean a single link. It means a primary and a secondary where you can physically change their orientation.
competing with these to death with words. I go through this with my sister. We have a great time with words and etymology and just vocabulary in general. And Wesley, that's another thing. Repeater.
Timeout. Repeater. Timeout. Cancel.
Well, you did it again, Charlie. Listen, Charlie, I was pointing out to a mistake you made in thinking that you were incoherent. Not that being incoherent was a mistake. That was a mistake that you thought you were incoherent. Back to you, Charlie.
Okay, John, now I'm really confused. I thought you were saying I was mistaken. I was very mistaken about the variometer. Maybe I should just really drop this whole thing. Get into trouble, and I'll try. And I'll try not to talk too long here. But I was Wesley. I was saying that the English language is a terrible language. It's overly complex. This is the only language I've used my entire life, and I'm still learning this language. Too many words that have similar meanings. Grammar is very difficult. I like to write, and I've been told that I'm a very good writer, and I question myself, I question my grammar, constantly checking myself, so my congratulations to you, Wesley, especially from going from Russian to Polish to English. I'll send it back to you, Wesley.
But if you are the writer, I might have had something that I was dreaming to put on paper. It's a shocking theory, really shocking theory. And it might put part of the word into, especially the Islam word into into kind of hate, personal hate to the one who is going to read it. But it's a good concept for the movie. Let me talk. I just don't want to discuss it over the radio, but it's because that what I'm talking about is immediately catching the feelings of most of the people. It's a contradiction of the basic understanding in area of logic, philosophy, and beliefs. But the thing is that that was many years ago. I was with the young lady, and we went to Krakow in Poland, and we wanted to go to there was a New Year Eve. And we wanted to have a party. And all of the places were actually full of people. And we went to one place and they told us that, yes, there are two seating places free, so we can buy the ticket. And then they told us, do you know where you are? I say, no, I don't know where I am. But you are in a gay and lesbian club. So I said, okay. So then we've got a company. Another two people came to us to our table. And they started discussion. Now, there were two men deeply in love with each other. And we didn't talk about the sex, we didn't talk about anything else, but we talked about philosophy. And that was the birth of that theory. I'm really afraid to start talking about it on the radio. But yes, if somebody makes put it on writing and makes the book, I believe the movie would be a shocking one. John, back to you.
KC2WGB. Oh, yes, Wesley. As you know, philosophy is one of my favorite subjects. I spend a lot of time doing that. My favorite philosopher is Plato. He said it all, and that was like 2,400 years ago. So it was all, he knew it then, and he said some amazing things. I just have a lot of respect for his work. Too bad Socrates didn't write things down instead of just blabbing, but Plato wrote most of it for him, so I guess that's okay. And Charlie, by the way, you're right with our language. Very difficult language for most people because we have silly words like the word rain, you know, that falls from the sky, the rain of a horse, the rain of a king. I was a Latin student. We didn't have that problem in Latin. And we have so many different languages mixed in with our English that we have to put up with all of their nonsense. It's a little difficult. Over to you, Charlie.
Absolutely, John. John, I knew someone who was fluent in Latin or well-schooled in Latin. And it amazed me that, as you well know, Latin is the foundation of so many different languages. And I had a document that was written in Spanish. And the gentleman did not know Spanish, but he was able to sift through it. And with his knowledge of Latin, he was able to interpret the document, which I found quite amazing. And it wasn't just Spanish that he could decipher, based on Latin. And Wesley, you're sounding very mysterious with what you're describing. Not exactly sure what it is. And you're reluctant to say what it is over the radio. Just that my personal philosophy is an acceptance of all people. I live my life that way. I can't quote any particular philosopher. It's my philosophy. Let me drop it. And I've been told that by other people. Sometimes when other people describe you, it really opens your eyes. I never knew it. I was told by one person that I was close to that I put up no barriers to people. And I was told by another person that I was accepting of all people, which is basically the same thing. And maybe it's because maybe this is my philosophy. The golden rule, the fundamentals of all religions, do unto others that you would want them to do unto you. That's simple. It's not always easy to do, but you know, we can try. Thank you, Wesley.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I was thinking to make a script for the movie, and this movie would make a lot of money. The simple idea of something that would be watched is put a controversy. If the movie does not have a controversy, mostly is not the money maker. But when the controversy is so logical and so strong that it's touching actually the feelings of millions or maybe billions of people, then this controversy is actually selling very well, although it is deeply touching the beliefs of these people. And there was that night when actually I construct that theory, and the guys were shocked. And actually they were adding to that, you know. Yeah, if we had a chance to talk, I would explain to you, but it's a money maker, definitely money maker. I couldn't write it because I'm the foreigner, so I wouldn't be ever able to put it on paper. Now, as far as Polish language, if you add one-third of a vocabulary to the English vocabulary, you will have a Polish vocabulary. Let me drop it. Now, Polish language is extremely precise. You have a one single word for almost everything, and not only. Apart from language developing words for everything possible that you can imagine, there is a development of expression, an expression of thought. And in this language, and most of the best, you are able to write the music.
morning. M2KZ is listening on the Limark repeater.
N2ZEP Mobile.
Hey, good morning. It's Carl, N2KZ, in beautiful uptown Stamford, Connecticut. How are you?
Good morning, Carl. N2ZEP, name here is Gary, and I'm in Nassau County, just starting out on my way into Manhattan.
Oh, the long and winding road. Where in Nassau? Grew up in Queens.
There was a little bit of interference. I heard that you grew up in blank. Starting out in the East Meadow area, and I should be on the Meadowbrook Parkway shortly. I'm on the local streets now, and it's a balmy 50 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wow, it's only 50 down there, huh? It's 57 up here. Not only did I spend time at then WVHC at Hofstra University.